Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, listeners. Welcome to another Blog Talk Radio show, Faces with Robin and Lulu, on the Hidden Truth Revealed channel, The Inside Scoop. Today is January 31st, 2018.
I'm Robin.
I am Lulu.
And you're listening to Faces with Robin and Lulu.
Right. Marcy will be joining us real quickly. We have an exciting show for you tonight. We want to welcome Bettina Rodriguez Aguilera. And here is the write-up on her.
She's running for U.S. Congress. Bettina Rodriguez Aguilera is a candidate for U.S. Congress in Miami, Florida. Bettina is a renowned international speaker with over 25 years' experience. Dedicated to improving her community, she served as a vice mayor and passed laws against human trafficking. Bettina is currently co-authoring The Big Secret and another book based on women leadership. We will be discussing human trafficking, people above politics, and people with special needs. You're listening to Face Us with Robin and Lulu. to get into the show, you dial 845-241-9962. And if you want to make a comment or a question as we get into the show, the way that you'll do that is to dial that number, 845-241-9962, and press a 1, which will let us know that you wish to speak on the air if you have a question or comment. Bettina is a Cuban exile immigrated to the United States as an infant with their mother and an older brother. She began working at the age of 13 to help with family expenses, as her father was a Cuban political prisoner and wasn't reunited with the family until she was 17 years old. Bettina Rodriguez Aguilera is an entrepreneur, educator, and community leader who has worked tirelessly to tackle South Florida's most difficult challenges. So we are delighted to be able to welcome her to our show tonight.
Right. We definitely are. We're going to go ahead and I'm going to bring Marcy on real quick to see if she's there with us. And then we'll bring Bettina on. Are you on there, Marcy?
Yes, I'm here. Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
Welcome,
how are you doing? Doing good?
I think I'm beginning to get the flu, but other than that, so I will probably be very quiet tonight.
Okay, sounds good.
But welcome, Bettina.
We're going to welcome Bettina on. We really do appreciate Bettina.
We're so glad she could join us. Bettina, are you with us?
Hi, how are you? Yes, I'm very, very happy and excited to be with all of you, and I just want to congratulate you for the work you do and the advocacy that you do and the community involvement and getting the word out on things that are important to people and make them understand that they are very powerful and can create change. So thank you so much for having me.
Well,
that's exactly what we talk about, is that you have to be very active nowadays.
And claim your own power and use it for your benefit and the benefit of those around you, because someone else will be happy to claim your power if you don't.
Exactly.
Right. So,
exactly.
Yes, we've got a lot to talk about. I know that you've actually passed some laws against human trafficking, and you've done some women's groups. And I mean, I read your whole write up on Google, and I was in awe about the whole thing with you. I was
so sweet.
Yeah, I was like, wow, she really can go get this, you know. And you talk about, you know, businesses for women. And we're pretty excited to have you talk about it. So maybe you want to just talk about how I know you're running for, is it U.S. Congress?
U.S. Congress, yes.
District
27, which is the district that Ilana Ross Letton has held for almost 30 years here in South Florida.
Right. Whatever made you decide to U.S. Congress?
Like you said, you know, my family brought me here when I was a baby, an infant. I grew up in New York until I was 7. And then since then, I have been in Florida, in Miami, Florida. My mother was an incredible role model for me. She is the kind of woman that, you know, principles and is very important for her. And God bless her soul. She passed a few years ago. But she waited for my father dressed in black for 14 years and showed us the importance of family and the importance of standing up for yourself. And that's what I learned, you know, from a very, very young age. And I've kept on going and doing and following really her footsteps and how she did everything possible to help and empower everyone around her. And as my brother, that he's 15 years older, and he left many things that he wanted to, in order to work full-time and try to support the family since he was 17 years old himself. So that's more or less, in a nutshell, you know, my family, and I'm very, very proud of them. So I started working in McDonald's when I was 13 in a work-study program to try to help off the family. And I got married very young at 17, and I went to school full-time. I went to work full-time, and I started a business on the side on the weekends. And with that, I paid my way through college and graduated with a degree in psychology and social work. And then after that, with other things in Harvard and leadership and University of Miami and budget and financial management, which, you know, that I think is a very good thing, because I really think when you really have to struggle and try as much as you can to get where you want to go, it, you know, it's sweeter. It really, really is. And I have two grown children and three grandchildren, and I've always told them that I will always give them what they need, but what they want, they have to fight for it, and they have to compete, and they have to do whatever they can to reach it. I think that we in life have to understand that anything in this wonderful country of ours is attainable as long as you really believe in yourself and use the opportunities that this country offers for you to get to where you want to go with a lot of hard work and a lot of sacrifice. But there are no limits, only those that you impose on yourself. So with that, from a very young age, I was working and going to school, and one of the things I saw is that, you know, women, especially in the time that I grew up, it was a little different, you know. It wasn't as easy, and one of the things is that I felt that women needed to be empowered. So in the 1990s, I started an organization called the New Woman Entrepreneur Center that I helped women and men, 30% that were men, start a business with or without money. Because money is important, but the most important thing is for you to be focused, to believe in yourself, and to have a goal that you want to reach. After I graduated from college, I started to work as a social worker. I was very, very happy doing that. And that is part of the book that you had mentioned that I was doing with Jack Canfield, which is the one that wrote Chicken Soup for Your Soul. I'm very happy to have already put out that book. It's now called The Big Secret. And my chapter is called Giving Yourself Permission, 5 Steps to Make It Happen. And it talks about this little story that I'm going to tell you now. After I graduated, I was a social worker. I worked for the government for 12 years, cutting red tape and resolving issues when things got complicated at all levels of government. And we were reduced from 35 to 3. Everyone in my department got ill because of the stress, which is a very real illness, is stress. So we really need to know how to manage that. And consequently to that, I had a lot of earaches, and it was that I had TMJ, and I had was clenching my teeth at night, and I broke the jaws in my mouth. And I had to have 3 open face surgeries, 1 every 6 months, to sew them back together again. And during this time, it was somewhat difficult because I went through a divorce and I had 2 little kids. But I decided to go to a women's group and say that I knew how to solve problems, but I was on leave without pay and I had no money, but I had to support my family. And a woman there told me that she would lend me a desk in her office. I did some cards and business cards in Office Depot, which were $9.99. And I started telling people what I could do. One of the women in that group sent me a client, and then Hurricane Andrew came. I started to do business loans, and with that, I started my business, all while having a metal halo around my head that opened and closed my mouth. And I started doing that, and by that, I learned how to do the business plan, understanding government. And based on what I went through and what I learned was when I opened the New Woman Entrepreneur Center that I helped over 600 women start and develop businesses. I held that for 7 years, and after that, then, I started traveling all over the world. I was to Albania for 3 months, in Dominican Republic, Argentina, all over the world, training people how they could start a business, how they can believe in themselves, and how can they become empowered. And that is what my philosophy is. That's what I really believe that we can do and we need to do. After doing this, my mother, that had me when I was she had me when she was 43 years old. She had a heart attack and a stroke. So I left everything and my travels, and I became her nurse 24 hours a day. It was very difficult because the system, even though I understood it and knew it and would tell other people what to do, once you're in there, you know, I saw the system really it doesn't work the way it really should. And I became a very big advocate for senior citizens and different programs that were available and started to and assist to create other programs to try to help senior citizens and saw a lot of abuse that was occurring during that time. She subsequently passed away after she was able to, thank God, she got a lot better. And I then became the economic developer of the city of Doral. And then I became vice mayor. And being a social worker, I dealt with a lot, also issues of domestic violence and human trafficking, and saw that there were our city was giving tickets for code violations for beds that were in tanning salons and in spas, and by my experience I knew that was really human trafficking. So we put down we sent in undercover detectives and worked with the federal, state, and the county government and closed down the human trafficking centers in the city. Wow. And then I created some laws in order to try to stop this from reoccurring and train police officers. Then that law has been subsequently passed in other cities throughout the state of Florida. And one of the very important things is that many, many men and women across our country and many other countries around the world, that to be an elected official, you have certain powers in order to help people, but you don't have to be an elected official in order to be empowered, in order to create laws, in order to change our community. We have many examples like Martin Luther King, like Elizabeth, and like so many other women and men that have changed the face of our country by being advocates and believing in themselves.
Right. Wow. That's quite impressive. So you were an actual caretaker then, right? So you understand how hard it is.
I was a caretaker for a few years, yes.
Yeah, it's really hard. I ended up taking care of my mom for 4 years, and I tell you what, she had severe dementia, and that was really tough. So I understand how that is. And one of the biggest problems that we've been having in Florida and in Colorado and all the other nations is the exploitation that a lot of these probate courts are doing to our elders. And not only that, but it's not even elders anymore. It's anybody who has wealth. And I know Florida has a lot of issues arising around the elders going on right now and their properties, putting them into nursing homes. Have you ever heard of anything like that out there?
Yeah, it's really horrible what the exploitation of senior citizens, what's going on with the issue of guardianship, and also with the issues of even, you know, reverse mortgage. These reverse mortgages, the reports have even shown that out of every 5 reverse mortgages, 3 are being trying to be taken away from seniors. You know, I think a lot of advocacy and education has to be done to try to help people with this. And the issue with guardianship, I met Marcy in not a very nice place, in a funeral. You know, she was explaining to me what she had gone through with her mother and still is going through. And thank God that Marcy, her mother has her to help and support her. But I've also seen many, many cases of seniors that really have no one, and mm-hmm. Their homes have been taken away from them, and not only that, their homes have been taken away from them, but sometimes that the seniors are in the home and they're abused. You know, there's this adult abuse that they just put them into a corner and they act like they don't even exist and they just live off of them, which is like being alive and not even, you know, being able to live your life. Somebody is living
right.
your life and taking
and you
over
what,
your life,
and
taking
I,
over things that you have gone through.
Right, and when
and
you
we really,
when they
really
put
need
a,
to work on laws to
right.
to stop.
Well, you have a lot of
and
seniors.
Also the Baker Act. The Baker Act is something
right.
also that is being used to take a lot of things away from senior citizens and those who are not senior citizens.
Right. Yeah, I remember my mom was Baker Act when she was down there in Florida. I remember that, and I know how it
mm-hmm.
works. Why is it that Florida mm-hmm. has that? I don't hear of too many other states that has that.
And you know, I'm also helping a situation. I don't know if you saw it in the news here, that a 7-year-old
uh-huh.
boy was Baker Act, and he was taken away, and battery charges were placed against him. It's incredible, you know. Our society, with all the faults that it has, when you travel around the world, you see that other societies are a lot worse than ours. So we have a very good society. I just think that sometimes more training has to be done for the people in power, and more things like attorney generals and that have to be placed independently in different levels of government to try to see the system, to show that the system is not working, and
mm-hmm.
for people to be able to go and to be able to complain with an independent body overseeing this, because abuse does happen, and we really need to stop this abuse, and we need to listen to more people like Marcy, for example, and like yourself, that
mm-hmm.
are dealing with these issues and try to create
mm-hmm.
the laws, developing boards of citizens that are going through this and that have seen the things that work and that don't work.
Right,
yes.
Exactly. I know, and we have a lot of cases, you know, nationally with the abuse to our seniors, and we get them in daily about, the, you know, putting them into nursing homes, and then they're starved, and then they're put into a hospice without food or water, and that's one of the cruelest things you could do to a human being. And it's,
oh, yeah.
And
the scars,
the thing with
you know,
children, you know, the thing with children, they also take children, and they take them away from their parents. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. And our problem is why isn't the court system, you know, the judicial system seems to have failed everybody. And I don't know if you noticed that a lot in Florida, but we have it. I hear a lot of complaints in Florida. We hear it in Colorado. We hear it all over the nation. But what can we do to start bringing, you know, new laws or something to start changing this going on? I've been to legislators. I've been to the attorney, you know,
attorney general.
Attorney general. We've been everywhere to try to stop the isolation of our elders, and it just seems that they don't even want to believe that this is even going on, you know.
Well, you know, that what you just said is a big problem, because sometimes societies do not want to admit that there is a problem, because then they feel that there are failures.
That makes sense.
You
know, but this is why independent bodies need to be established, so there is a place that you can go and they are not attached to either the employees or the elected officials. I was a guardian ad litem. I assume you know what that is.
Oh, yeah.
Which is,
yes.
I was a guardian ad litem in the school system. And since I was not paid by anybody and I was really not controlled by anybody, I was there basically to be the guardian ad litem of the person that was taking the other person to court with many cases of abuse of children and adults. And you were there in the middle to investigate what was going on with the courts, what was going on with the system, and what was going on with the parents. So you weren't really part of any of those three bodies of control. You were just there for the child. And I think that more of that also has to be done. More people have to be trained with that. But people that are doing it not necessarily for the money or for the power, but just for the person itself to be able to be an in-between. And I think that what we can do is to have one of the things that we can do is to have more people like you, to have more shows like this, to be able to raise our voice. One of the things that, you know, there's always good and bad in everything, of course, but one of the things social media has done is that it has really, you know, been like an attorney general, let's just say.
Right.
You know, because right now talk about these things, and we can raise our voices, and we can multiply ourselves, and we really don't need that much money in order to do that. And we can get like-minded people in order to come together. I think that, you know, the what kills everything is people not to have an empathy in order to really create change. But if we are creating a society, regardless of, you know, there are problems, but I think our society is a lot better than even when I, you know, when I grew up. I remember when I was a social worker and I was working with abused women, the law was that if you weren't married, the police couldn't go in. If you showed that you were hit, you had and the bruises were over 45 hours, we could not take the case. There are more centers for animals than there are for people. There are more shelters for animals than there are for people. And that has been changing. That has been changing, and life has been improving. And the reason that it has been happening is because there are people like you, people like Marcy, that are advocates, that are not afraid, that are willing to put themselves out there, take their time, raise their voices, create change, create laws. And that's what we have to keep on doing. No, we really need to understand that the only way that we can change things is if we create the consciousness and we create a reality of what is actually going on. And that's, you know, we should not be afraid. And the only thing to create change is to make things different, not be doing the things the same way that we have been doing it before, and not to be afraid to say what's wrong and create the change that is necessary.
Wow. You know, that's pretty right on there, you know, and I just got an email in saying I wish I could vote for her.
But that's the same thing all over the world. I was in Albania. Okay, I don't know if you know where Albania is, but it's like the Haiti of Europe. Okay, when I got there, the airport had no lights, so you had to go during the day. That could explain to you how poor this country was. And women, until just a few, a year or two before I got there, it was controlled by Andrew Joya for 50 years under a very strict communist rule, could not drive. And the only way that a woman can put a case of abuse is the family after the husband had killed her. Okay.
Good Lord.
So I went there alone. Sent by the United States, United States Agency for International Development. My role was to train over 100 NGOs, the presidents and the secretaries, on how to create change and do laws. And after being there for 2 weeks, they asked me to be there for 3 months to actually try to pass some laws with other people. But I was a head leader of the training programs. And the law that we chose was the toughest law because it was a law to join the family and against domestic violence. Everybody told me that it was impossible, that this country did not have to pass laws, that this country was not going to support anything like that. And we started working, and we did the first petition drive, the first press conference ever in the country. I trained the parliament. I trained the attorneys, the organizations, and we passed the first 17 laws after 50 years. And the first law was a law against domestic violence.
Wow!
So it could happen.
Wow!
Anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
I wasn't an elected official, so anybody can create laws. The only thing you have to do is break the ice. Think of if you had a magic wand, what could you do to create change? Do a strategy. Do a plan. Get people together. People will join you because people are looking for change. They're looking for leadership. They're looking for where they could really see somebody that's real and that could really create that change. And you will be amazed of what anyone can do if they really have passion for what they're doing, they really believe in what they're doing, they can create the change and we can create the world that we really want.
That's
right.
So powerful. And we talk to a lot of the people that are being held from seeing their mothers. They're being held, visiting them, feeding them. It's such a crisis going on, and my heart goes out to each and every person that's under guardianship. And that's my main concern, is the guardianship with the elders. And, you know, we don't have strong enough laws in there. And I know Florida.
So what laws would you want?
What
would be the law that you would want to create to try to ease this and change? What would you want to do?
I would definitely want to have children be able to visit their parents when they are in a nursing home. So every child, you know, as long as been absolutely showing some wrongdoing. I've had, you know, one of my family members was absolutely in the wrong, but every one of the other family members were, you know, really good with mom, you know, but we were not allowed to see her for 3 years. And the problem with that is that these people with dementia, oh my gosh, they have a hard enough time coping without their family. So it's so important, and that's what I would want to do the most of all, is to make sure that each and every person has the right to be with their family, you know, their mother,
yes, okay,
their dad, or is seriously ill. I can't even tell you how many complaints we have where they're just not letting them come and be with their parents. We've got a story in the name of Mary Bush. She has Genevieve Bush. It's been 2 years up in Pennsylvania. She's get to see her mom 1 hour a month, and that took her about 2 years to do that. I mean, that to me is nothing but, and all, most of her money is gone. $3 million is gone, and I that's one thing I really want to see happen is the stopping the exploitation of these people's property, their rights, their freedom. And we've got people with brain injuries that these attorneys are going in and stealing their trust fund monies when it's supposed to be going to these people. And these are the kind of laws I want to try to change here in Colorado, and not only that, but nationally if we can, because it's a national crisis.
Luann, I have told Marcy that I want to sit with her, and this has been since I first met her.
Yes, that's true.
Is that true, Marcy?
Yes, it is.
And draft and sit down and draft a law that would do that. Okay.
Yes.
And on the air, I'm gonna ask you, Marcy, to see if next week we can sit down.
Yes,
okay,
we can.
And the law, to see how we can present this so this can happen, because this is ridiculous that this would happen. I mean, my mom had dementia, my father had dementia. I know what that is. I know it's terrible for everybody. It's terrible for them when they first getting it, because they get mad at themselves because they know mm-hmm. that this is happening. And it's terrible for us, you know, for the children that are seeing this. But the most horrible thing is that you're absolutely right. With dementia and with anybody, we revert back to childhood. And you need to have a structure, and you need to have things that are familiar with you, around you, and your family mm-hmm. is, you know, that is what is part of your DNA. I mean, it's part of your essence. It's part of who you are. So stripping away this from you, it is, mm-hmm. you know, that it just creates masturbates the situation. It just creates dementia, and it creates everything else. It makes it worse. So I would like to sit down and see how we can draft a law to see if we can present this. The good thing is that when you run for Congress, when you have that seat, and I know I'm going to win it, whatever laws that we pass are good anywhere in the country, not just in Florida. So we're going to work on that, and I know that with people like you, we will be able to create that change that is needed. But you know, we just need to sit down, and we need to do
mm-hmm.
it.
Yes, because one of the sad things that I saw, that the courts are not acknowledging the fact that you go in to take care of your parent because they're not mentally there, and for them not to look at the medical side, even though they have been already incapacitated, and keep putting the individual through that is torture for the ward, the mentally incapacitated. I mean, if you read the definition of Alzheimer's and dementia, it tells you they're disoriented, they get foggy-minded, they get confused, they lose their short-term memory. And to go in and isolate a mother and a daughter, I mean, if a judge can't see that that's wrong, then we really need to change these laws, because that's why you go and protect them. And that, to whether it's my mother or any of us, like I just had a call from Brian Berry, who the guardian put the mother in a home, and she went on a cruise, And then mom just passed away because they were not feeding her enough water, and she dehydrated, and she was having, she died of urinary tract and all kinds of things. And this, the, it was a nightmare. And this is his mom, who he was even having a hard time hearing how she was doing. This is a nightmare, and this is happening to there. He just lost his mom, and
oh,
I mean, it's just in so many cases. My mother went from living in a beautiful apartment on the ocean with her friends and me watching over her to,
right.
and judges are okay with her living inside a garage, isolated from
right.
the world.
And Martin,
that's all right.
Right. Well, that's why I wanted. That's why I was so excited when you told me that Bettina, you know, was going to come on our show, because if we had more candidates like Bettina that would actually listen to us, they would understand that this is a nationwide crisis, and it's
right.
the whole human being in America. And the story we had a story on last night on another radio show. It was. Victims and whistleblowers, and they were talking to a lady named Faith. I think her name was Faith. And they absolutely, the nurses were in there saying, yay, yay, the mother's going to die tonight. And I was so shocked.
Yeah,
I was so shocked.
Was singing a song.
Uh-huh.
While she's there, her mother's there, and they're singing a song, your mother's going to die tonight. Your mother's going to die tonight.
Oh,
yeah,
and it's so shocking to hear that this how our elders are being treated, seriously. But if we could put together a law of some kind to stop this horrific killing of our people and putting them in hospices, taking their property, I mean, I'd be grateful. I mean, I go to a nursing home right now and I see my mom and I see these people that are so vulnerable, like your mother that you took care of, my mother took care of, and the mother that Marcy wants to take care of, but we're not able to do that. It's so frightening to know that your mother is dying and you cannot go and visit. And it's I hear these stories every day, and it just rips my heart out. But I
or in this case and in many of these cases, to know that your mother is dying because they're killing her, because they have cut off water from her several days before. They've cut off food from her several days before, and now they're giving her a lethal injection of drugs that will kill her, and there's nothing you can do about it. Too bad. You don't like it? Oh, well. That's just your tough luck, because that's how it's going to be. This is horrifying. This is absolutely horrific.
Yeah, so
and
we were talking to... Go ahead.
I'm sorry. No,
ahead,
but if you go see them, and you see the things that they're doing, then they retaliate. They blame you for all these things that you haven't done because somebody's standing up and saying, if you're going to take care of her, then do it right. But they don't want to hear that because they want to continue to do wrong. And the problem is that the court, once they get some sort of guardianship, they think that they're protected. And they're not protecting the mentally incapacitated, vulnerable adult that's happening. I get calls all the time since the show. I have friends from all over the place playing that these women and men have been put through this with their loved one. And, I mean, how can a daughter want to hurt her mother? I mean, come on. Horrible.
Right. So Bettina, talking about... Go ahead. Go ahead, Bettina.
No, go ahead. What were you going to say?
I just wanted to let you know that, you know, we follow these stories nationally. We follow them in our own state. We've got 40 families here in Colorado, and I think about 7 of those family members, the mothers have, I am going to say, alleged murdered, because I feel in my heart they were murdered by these guardians. You know, and I don't know
let
what
me
else
ask
the
you,
word.
Let me ask you a question that other people might be thinking.
Okay.
So you could answer it. There are like guardian ad litem. Let's just say there are different advocate programs that supposedly go in and there are 1-800 elderly abuse lines. Why is it
right.
that these programs do not work if something like that is being seen and they are called? What goes? What happens with that?
They ignore it.
I have called Department of Social Services. I have called elderly hotlines. We've been down to AARP. We've been down to the Attorney General's. We've been down to legislators.
And what have they said?
They say
line and different, you know, the nonprofits that are supposedly have to go in there and see when something like this happens to the elderly. What have they done when something like this has been reported of an elder abuse?
Right. The problem with that is when you call in to somebody, they call Department of
Elder Affairs.
Adult Protective
Area
Services.
Agency on Aging.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Well, when you go down and you talk to any of them, we've been down to quite a few, and they'll take your name and your number down, and they will never return your phone call. And I've called them a couple times, you know, when my mom was having problems, I couldn't find my mom, and they would sit there and say, you know what, this is all a civil matter. You have to go to an attorney and go there. So they refer you to the attorney who is abusing you in court, taking your money and not helping you with your family member. And it's a big vicious cycle of this going on nonstop. So,
right, and if you go to the police, you say, this person has been kidnapped, they are being held against their will, they simply said, well, that sounds like a civil matter, this is a family matter, you need to go to an attorney, you need to settle this in court, and if you persist, they say, well, now we'll lock you up if you want.
Yeah, it's really
if
bad.
You don't go away now and stop bothering us, we'll lock you up.
Uh-huh.
And that, we heard that. I mean, that's something that we
right.
heard.
Well,
I'm quoting.
Well, the thing is that the system is not working, and that the elder abuse
working.
Lines, so far as you're concerned, they're not taking action in order to cut through all the different steps that are necessary and try to get assistance for the elderly. They are just
exactly.
They just refer you to the courts, and it's mm-hmm. not working.
It's not working
for them. Right. Well, Marcy, another thing we got to understand is that when you go and you go to Adult Protective Services and you tell them something's going on with your loved one, your parent, or whatever, they go in. They end up getting guardian of your mother, and then they are the ones who are abusing the mother. And then, I mean, you would think that the Adult Protective Services would be helping them. It's totally wrong. It is. They are some of the worst I have ever seen here in Colorado, and from other places I have heard.
Florida,
where they are
too.
We're actually doing the exploitation.
And it has something to do with the way that these things are financed. These people get a paycheck for taking a person under their care, and that seems to be something irresistible for them. It seems that once they have one, it's like, that's like, oh boy, another gold mine. You know, that's another $800 a month for me,
yeah.
or whatever it
yeah.
is. And that's what they see. And
yeah.
so they take that person, and then you may report them to Adult Protective Services to protect them from some harm from perhaps a family member that is a bad seed. That's, you know,
right.
And there may be some real danger for them. Adult Protective Services comes in, and they basically confiscate that person from the entire family, isolate that person, and they're the ones that are responsible oftentimes for the process of isolate, medicate, steal the estate, and go out and celebrate. And it's...
Yeah, that's what they do.
This is what we see.
That's
this
what
is
they
what we
do.
Get for, this is what we have cataloged
wow.
in all the work that we've done with all these families that we've researched. Is that oftentimes the ones who are there to protect the person become the exploiters. And I think it just has to do with the fact that the way these things are financed, if a person is taken into custody, then their property becomes up for grabs. And that because they know the property is up for grabs, They put a lien on the property and immediately start billing as quickly as they can, as much as they can, and they'll do it in teams. You'll have, you know, you may have a guardian ad litem, but if so, there may also be a special guardian with limited powers. There also may very well be a court-appointed attorney. There also may very well be an attorney that was originally hired by someone else.
Who are all getting paid out of the estate.
Who all will be paid out of that person's estate. Once the estate goes to the court says, well, I can see that this is a situation where we have an individual who has resources, but there's family members. We're just going to skip over those family members, take those resources, and divvy it up among our friends here in the court.
Right.
That is what happens, and that is how it goes. And
saying that there are certain issues with the court system in itself.
Oh, absolutely.
And
it's some of the worst I have ever seen. And I know here in Colorado, and I also talked to Maria, it was Pando. She's another judge out in Florida. And she said that
she
they
knows
have
her.
A voting.
She knows Judge Pando.
Right.
Yes.
Right, Pando. Mm-hmm. She brings, and you can vote for your judges in here. Here they're voted in by the governor, but we can vote them out. And so the problem is that they vote in all these judges, and they don't even they appoint them, but they don't even give you the right information on how to even vote them out. It's such a big scam out here in Colorado.
Well, the legal system in Colorado, the Supreme Court made a ruling of some kind that, or a rule or a guideline or something that said we, the judicial branch, do not need to be part of the Open Records Act. So we will share records if we want to, and if we don't want to, we won't.
Right.
So, of course, they don't share anything of substance.
Right.
And you can't find out anything about a judge. You can't find out if that judge is an alcoholic that's had five DUIs. You can't
find out
if that judge has assaulted his wife. You can't find out if that judge is a drug addict that has been arrested.
So there's no sunshine law like we have here.
Right.
Nothing.
Well, there's nothing.
It is
there.
Black hole as far as information coming out of the judiciary.
But Anna,
we definitely need to sit down and see what we could do in the federal level. Of course, each state, you know, manages itself independently, but there are certain federal laws that transcend. We need to look into that. And, you know, every year we're going to be having more and more senior citizens in our society because of just a population type of situation. We're not, it's not like we used to be, you know, we're not producing as many children right now. So seniors are growing. So this is something that is going to escalate even more from what it is right now. So, again, you know, the federal government and the state, our type of republic is somewhat different because there are certain laws that the state mandates and controls, but there is definitely some federal laws that we can look into to try to see if we could create and pass some laws that can protect this and create an awareness campaign so this type of thing does not happen.
Yes.
Right. That would be wonderful. You know, I can't even express to you enough. No, there was an SB 178 that was passed that was supposed to be helping with our exploited. It was a federal law, but I'm not sure exactly how well it's going to do. I've heard good stuff. I heard bad stuff about it, but I just don't know. Sometimes when you try to pass a law, the legislatures will try to knock it down so much that by the time you pass a law, it doesn't. There's no teeth in it. You know, they don't. It won't help.
They will flex put in any consequence.
Right, what I am hearing here is that there is very little checks and balances. And,
exactly.
I think that that's one of the things that has to be seen is the checks and balances that there are. It's also the issue of money. If full full rights are given to an attorney or a guardian, that there is no review or checks and balances of what is happening there and the welfare and safety of that person, then we got a problem, because our court system is so overwhelmed with cases that they are, you know, it's like a factory. They're just, you know, just trying to hear them as fast as they can. So, you know, it sounds like there needs to be some type of more stringent checks and balances, and that the family itself has to have a bigger input into the welfare of those seniors.
Yes, like the daughter or the son, right?
Right. Yeah,
right.
Not a grandchild that wasn't around. So,
right.
And that's a huge problem too, because to me, how can a court not see that a daughter or a son is trying to take care of their mentally incapacitated, vulnerable parent, but they can put that to the side and just approve hundreds of thousands of attorney's fees and still the ward is not well taken care of. And that,
right,
to me raised my eyebrows, and that's when I thought, there is something wrong here. This doesn't look right, doesn't feel right, and it's not right. And then I found out about all these other cases. That's a $1 trillion business. So why would they want to settle or take care of the mentally incapacitated? They don't
right.
care.
It's,
they just want their money.
Right. It's a mentally,
right.
it's a multi-$1 trillion business now that's going on in our courtrooms. They're actually using our courtrooms, these attorneys are using the courtrooms as a business.
And that business is organized crime.
Right, it's organized crime.
Honestly, if we just cut to the chase and say it for what it really is, if you or I did these things that they do without the authorization of a man in a black robe or a woman in a black robe that is has been assigned that particular authority, that is crime, and that would be prosecuted, and we would rightfully be put in prison for taking a person, kidnapping them, keeping them away from all those who love them, taking all their property, taking the money, dividing it up among our friends, and then killing that individual on a schedule where we dehydrate them and deprive them of food and then inject them with lethal dose of drugs.
Right, and I know that... the other judge that we had on, Anna Pando,
Judge Anna Maria Pando.
Yeah, and she said that she's a great lady. We met her out here in Colorado. She came out here. She said that she would like to help change some laws, too, so maybe you guys could hook up.
Yeah, I was telling Marcy that. I know her. I haven't seen her for a while, but I know her personally. And she lives, you know, here in the general area. So, yeah, we can definitely all sit down and see what we could do and see how we can draft that these things. But just by, you know, seeing and hearing you, I think that one of the very important main things is the checks and balances issues, that it seems that there are no checks and balances, that these things are written out. You know, these attorneys get this and they – really have no one checking to see if what they're doing is correct, if all the money is taken away, if their family can be seen. It sounds horrible. You know, it's something that really needs to be addressed as definitely as soon as possible.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to sitting down with Marcy and Ana Maria, Judge Ana Maria Pando, and maybe others also, and doing a special section within my campaign to evaluate the system and see how we can come up with a comprehensive type of,
you know,
issuance.
Right, and if we could also
see if we can make
that law
this better.
You decide, if we can also take that law that you decide and apply it, I can get it into other states you know, to stop this, because this is really cruel what is going on.
Yes,
you know?
It is.
So,
right.
You know, and I know different states, they're all different, but every single
right.
person is the same. They do not need to be murdered and tortured like this.
No.
I mean, it's hard to watch. It's really hard to hear and watch. And
well,
we
I'm
get,
so sorry that, you know, these people are going through this, but but something's going to happen. You know, we're definitely going to create a better environment to see if
yeah.
we could try to assist these people.
Right,
and
it's also
you got my word
I
that I will do everything in my power to try to see what we could do with this.
Okay, and another
oh,
thing is the nursing homes. The nursing homes that have these elderly people in there, they are just making the money. I mean, there needs to be stricter laws when they take in an elderly person in a nursing home, not to treat them like they're there just to pay the rent, but the nursing home my mom is in, they treat her so wonderful. I mean, I am so blessed to have her in Colorado right here where they treat her with dignity. They love her. They care for her.
Yes.
They put a therapy in for her. But when you hear other stories, it's danger to these people.
Horrifying.
And that needs to be horrifying what some of these nursing homes are doing. Like the ones that happened in Florida when they had that big hurricane and those
yeah, hurricane,
people killed them.
Several of them
right.
passed away,
but this,
you know, because
exciting.
It was too hot. It was horrible. That's
right.
Totally unacceptable. I remember that, and I was very infuriated. I tried to investigate, you know, what was going on there and raise my voice against that. That was totally unnecessary death on. And there is no reason why something like that would have happened. There is just no reason. Which, you
yeah.
know, I mean, we can go back and back and back. I mean, we had the hurricane here, which didn't do much, but did do enough. And the Florida Power and Light that we don't have down here, we need to, even there, you know, I remember that I had to be calling everywhere and trying to get generators to senior citizens, but there was no set policy that these homes, the generator would be taken to these homes. So, you know, there's just so much to do that we need to try to sit down and really
mm-hmm.
try to address.
Right.
And sometimes
yeah.
we just need a little policy and you know, some light to be shone on these issues, so people will know that there are watchdogs and there are people that are looking over it, like what you both are, all of you there are doing. And again, I commend you for everything that you're doing. I'm gonna have to leave in at 10.
Okay. Well, I have one person I think that asked you a question. Can I bring him in?
Sure.
Okay, and then. I want you to see if he's on here right now. Hold on a second.
Hello,
hi.
Randall?
Hi.
Yeah. Did you have a question or comment?
Yeah, actually, a couple of things. First of all, as the other side of the coin, I'm a parents' rights activist, so we're concerned about the children, what's going on with CPS. But we're pushing an amendment on the Constitution for parents' rights. Maybe that amendment needs to be family rights. So I just wanted to throw
That's
that out
idea.
There.
The
oh. other the other thing
yeah.
is, as you all said, we take this to the politicians and we take this to the Attorney General, and you talked about that at the beginning, and they have a criminal investigation. When we take the evidence and they ignore us, what can you, being in the system and being in politics as much as you were and an advocate, what can we do to force them to look at the evidence?
You know, I mean, and this is not the first line of action, but the news, social media and the news, get enough people to shine a light into it. Nobody likes bad press. Nobody likes this. First, you work within the system. Try to make things happen, try to make things work, because that's why we have a system and we have laws and we have processes. But when they don't work, then you go out to the next step, which is the people's court, which is the press. And if they're going to have enough people calling and enough talk happening, they will definitely, they don't want that fire underneath, you know, their desk, let's just say, and they will, and they will create some action, some immediate action on that.
You want to know how hard it is to get the press to even notice what's going on is extremely difficult.
Oh, I understand, but that's what we but that's what we can do. You know, that's one of the things that always works. Go out to social media, go out to the press. I mean, and of course, you know, when that person gets elected again, let them know that thank God that we are in a system that, you know, you will do everything possible for them not to get elected again, that they have to be accountable. You know, we just need to have checks and balances and accountability for these people to understand that they have to do what they need to do to protect the people that voted for them. That's what they're there for.
That's right. But they seem to forget that we vote for them when they become in power, and they just turn the other cheek.
Well,
and that's,
you know,
that's
like I said, so far as the federal government goes, every 2 years is an election. Every 2 years. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have a lot of time in there. They have 2 years, and as much pressure that you could put, things do change. But you just have to, you know, the pressure can't be just once and that's it. The pressure has to be constant. The pressure has to be constant, and if the pressure is constant, they will break. But you need to have a network, and you need to have an organization that will not let that pressure go away.
Yeah, I think you're right. No,
Well,
we've been in legislation a few times, and a lot of people would come up to us and they say, just don't stop what you're doing. And it gets really tiring after their day after day after day. You say,
right.
don't stop. And it's like, but how, you know, it's really tiring to keep doing that. You feel like nobody's ever listening to you, you know.
Right.
It's just,
no, it's
do you remember, Ludlam, how many years it took for women to have the right to vote? It took 75 years.
Yeah.
Almost 75 years. Okay.
Wow.
And
that's
if somebody would have gotten tired, we still would not have the right to vote. So what I'm saying is, it's not easy. Advocacy is not easy. I understand that. Change is not easy. People don't like change. People don't, because they like things the way they were. That's one of the things people hate in this world, and I don't like to use that word, is change. They like things the way they're used to it. But things can change, but you have to be very passionate, you have to have a plan of action, and you have to be consistent, and you can't. The pressure cannot let go. You just have to keep on going until you get to where you need to go.
Right.
Giving up
that's
not an option.
You know,
that's very
Susan B. Anthony said, okay, failure is impossible. And that's what you got to keep in mind. Failure is impossible.
That.
Yeah.
Wow, that's good.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
That's really good. So, yeah, that would be awesome if we could get some legislators together and maybe have some first big law out there. I know that Dr. Sam Sugar he lives out there, and he has the abusive probate guardians.
Americans Against Abusive Probate Guardians.
Right, and he's been trying to change
that. Oh, wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, he's been trying to change.
Martha, can you send that to me so I can
I'm going to contact you with him if you like, because I know him.
You know, I mean, you could, my email is info@bettinaforcongress.com. So, you know, if anybody wants to send anything to me, please, you know, feel free to do so. And we'll get this, we'll get, you know, one of the things with me is that I am an advocate. I have been an advocate and an activist all of my life.
Right.
All of my life. And I think that is what a politician should be. And a politician should be an activist and an advocate for the people that they represent. And that's the way I've operated, and that's why I will always be. You know, we need to have the place of power just to use it in favor of creating laws and having a voice for those that don't have the voice. That's the only reason you should be up there. That's it. If you're not there for that reason, then you got to take them down. You know, that's the only reason that any politician should be a politician, to be an activist and to be a voice for those who don't have the voice.
And the vulnerable do not have the voice, poor thing.
That's perfectly well said. I absolutely agree with you, and that's why we tell everybody, when you're in doubt, vote them out, you know, with our judges.
Exactly.
You know,
I like that. When you're in doubt, vote them out.
When you're in doubt, vote them out. You know? And that's what we go around and tell everybody, because we don't have any information on the judges or anybody. So I tell everybody, if that's with the legislators, when in doubt, vote them out. And it's starting to really, really work in our state. I mean, we voted out one judge last year.
Change is slow,
but you know,
we do
one of the things, you know, you've been talking about a lot of different issues, of course, and a lot of different power structures. But you know, I always say that when you look at a consequence of something that is happening, you have to see what is making it happen. What is the root of this whole thing? And if the root of the whole thing is maybe the judges, because those are the ones that are giving the cases to these attorneys, then maybe that should be the emphasis of the time spent to create change, should be to change that. So the judges not, you know, the issue is that the judges shouldn't be sheltered from who they are and what they are. Maybe that they should, you should, in Colorado, where this is happening, you should look at that instead of looking at the consequence. This is the consequence that all these horrible things are happening. What is creating this? Supposedly, you say that the judges are giving these cases to these attorneys, and they are not really listening to what you have to say. And the problem is that the judges don't have any power. They have all the power. You have no power of who appoints them. Is the governor who appoints them? Is this what you're saying, right?
Yes.
So maybe that's what should be looked into before everything else, because that's the root of all the problems.
Mm-hmm. Right, that is the root of all the problems. But out here, it is, I'm going to say, it's totally corrupt with so many people in there. We've worked with the Judicial Performance Commissioners. They seem to not even hear a word we say. I mean, it's been very difficult. Even our Supreme Court Justice, we've been up and talked in front of her quite a few times, and they just don't do as we ask them to, and it's just so difficult here. You know, it's quite frustrating.
And I assume that you've spoken to your federal representatives also there.
We've talked to everybody
concerning that issue.
Right. Yeah, we've talked to them on. We told the Judicial Performance Commissioners we want to know more about our judges, and they passed some other law that doesn't even pertain to that. I mean, it doesn't pertain to anything we ask them to do. They do something totally different. That we like, why are they passing that? That's ridiculous. But they're not getting to the real root of the problem. It seems like,
and
they
the
don't,
governor.
Yeah, they don't care. Trying to get
they,
to get into a governor.
It, and they'll be very polite and pleasant, but when it comes time to write the laws, then they go to basically a group of lawyers that are working with the judges,
the bar,
to write something that suits them.
Right, right.
And there's never any accountability that is put into place where there will be checks and balances on their power. As a matter of fact, each time we try to get them to diminish the concentration of power in the few hands, they concentrate it more.
Right.
The laws that they do pass actually wind up working in reverse of the direction that we're trying to get them to move.
Right.
And,
let's try to see what we can do at a federal level that will trickle down to the state level. Because the federal government cannot directly tell the state what to do, but we could probably look and see what we can do so there can be more checks and balances, and that will trickle down to the state level.
Right.
It has been an incredible honor, really, to know that people like you exist. Just know that you have a friend, and Marcy has publicly stated that she will be meeting with me in the next 1 or 2 weeks to see what we could do. Please send me anything that you think that can help to do this to, at the info@bettinaforcongress.com and see if maybe in a few weeks we can come back on the show and maybe have something at least preliminary that we've been working on.
That'd be great. And I'd like to get you in touch maybe with Marty Oakley. She's a huge radio show host, another one that we've been trying to work on this nonstop, day and night, and I'd like for her to maybe get in touch with you also. She has another huge audience, over 100,000 people that listen in, many people from Florida listen in to all these shows. So that's why, I know that Florida is a really tough place to be. We get a lot of complaints from there, but with you being there, we actually felt kind of excited about this.
Right.
You end up
We do meet people
who get excited.
Dedicated to helping others, who also are involved in trying to make the change by actually becoming active in politics and that kind of thing. It's exciting. It's a very nice thing to see because we know that the need is quite desperate.
Right. It's
exciting for me to know that there are people like you out there. It's really very refreshing. So again, I really admire all of you, and I hope to talk to you again soon. And like I said, failure is impossible. So just keep on doing what you're doing, and change will come. Positive change and innovation to do the checks and balances that we need. Thank you again. Thank you, Marcy, for inviting me. Thank you, all of you. It's been wonderful to meet you, and maybe someday we'll be able to meet in person.
I will be down here actually, and I'll be coming to you in June.
We'll hook you up.
Yeah. Wonderful. Okay, great. Thank you. Bye bye.
Okay.
Bye, Bettina. Thank you. She was great.
That's amazing. I mean, oh, my gosh, I wish all of our advocates for the seniors, for families, for our children. Oh, my gosh. Randall, are you still in touch with us?
Yeah, I'm still here.
What do you think of Bettina? I mean, I think she's very genuine. It's amazing to have an advocate like that for our families. And you were talking earlier that you have a parent's rights, and you're thinking of changing it to family's rights. Were you saying that?
Well, actually, there was a amendment put forth a couple of years ago for parents' rights, and it was withdrawn by the sponsor. Lindsey Graham has reintroduced it, and of course, it's been put in limbo. Something like that might be something that, because every time I've read the amendment, it was like, this is great, but, now that you've brought this up and back to my attention, my, of course, direction is toward the kids, your direction's toward the adults, And we really, really need to unite these issues. I mean, the veterans' rights, the whole. And but I liked what she said. I thought this was an awesome show. It was probably one of the better shows with a candidate or with a politician than I have ever heard at anywhere, because she didn't play around. She was very direct. amazing. You know, she answered the question. Yeah, it was very amazing that, you know, we have a candidate like this. The other issue is the bar. We need to get rid of the bar.
Yeah,
the
I
bar
agree.
Is the
I
one
have
that.
A PhD.
Every
you know?
Politician has a bar member in their office if they're not an ex-bar member.
Right.
Yeah.
All the judges have to be bar members. It's a fraternity, and until we get rid of the bar, and, you know, maybe you need to bring Chris Hallett in because his proposal is to get rid of the bar and turn the licensing of the bar over to the states, just like you do a doctor or a real estate agent, or, you know, they still get the same training, but the state licenses the attorney, and the attorney pays his dues to the state, creates revenue for the state, instead of paying his tuition to the bar, which is a 501c3, having a public office in your state capital, and they're not a state agency.
Right. Wow. But, yeah, that's
they
amazing.
Are a
you
private,
know,
funded
get rid of the bar.
Nonprofit.
Yeah, nonprofit. Well, that could have fooled me. I think they're a big profit. But, you know, but the thing I want to talk about, Randall, you're talking about the family and the children and how we need to come together. I've been working, you know, with Debbie Carroll lives out here, and she's with the fourth branch. And I remember her coming to me and talking to me and saying, Luann, you don't see the big picture. It's not only, it's the same thing with children as it is with adults. They're taking our children and putting the parents through hell without their children while they have to pay these huge fees to court costs. And the same thing's going on with their parents. They're taking away the inheritances. They're taking away the elderly people from the kids. But you're absolutely right. Debbie's right. It is one big ball that all of us need to come together and fight this thing, you know. It's the same mechanisms that they use in every family. But the problem is a lot of families don't realize that this is going on nationally, and they figure, why isn't this working for me? What's going on? The judicial system is basically, in my words, screwed up, okay? It's not doing its job. It's not working for the people. It's destroying families. It's destroying children's lives. I mean, I have seen so many children where they're not with their mother or their dad. It's like, what is going on in this society, you know?
Well,
and then they,
even at that, you know, you're talking about how they kill the elderly once they've stealed their estates. When these kids come out, and you know, we've got, of course got the divorce issue, but we got the CPS issue. These kids come out of foster care. They have no birth certificate. They have no way to get their ID. They have no nothing. And there is no program within the foster care system to get these kids a way out when they are institutionalized. They get out and they have nothing, and they have no training on how to get anything that they need to even make a living.
Well, what do you mean by taking their birth certificate? You know,
if you go into a foster care institution, now usually, you know, sometimes foster parents will collect that stuff so that they can, you know, help the child, but most foster care parents don't care. They get their money every month. When these kids get out of the foster care system, when they age out, they have not been taught how to get their birth certificate, how to get a Social Security card, how to get a driver's license.
Right.
And they're kicked out of the foster care system without this education. And then they, you know, they don't know how to get their stuff. And they're kicked out on the street.
Right. Gosh, it's mind-boggling to even think of any of that. I mean, we do stories on children's rights, and we do stories on all kinds of things, but it's the whole picture of what's going on with not only it's the whole picture. If you were to focus in on it, it is a big cabal against our families. I mean, it is. It's like, how do we break these families down? You know, you put these elderly people, you know, into nursing homes, and then you take their property away. And then that next generation, they lose their inheritance. And then those are all the children that are being put into the CPS issues, the foster care and stuff. I mean, it's quite sickening to do shows. You know, I listen to these shows all the time, and it's like, oh my God, I walk sometimes away with a headache, saying, how can we fix this? And that's one thing about this Bettina. Oh boy, she is a really nice lady. I'm so glad to have met her, Marcy. You did a great job there.
Thank you.
I have to say that.
Absolutely.
She also got us. Maria, she also found Anna Maria Pando, and she actually came out to Colorado during Christmas, and we actually got to have lunch with her, and she was a retired judge. And she sees always these issues happening, so I'm connecting her with Bettina to see if we can do some movement out there. Even in Florida is a good start. Anywhere is a good start. I'm happy wherever the start is to start changing some of this epidemic going around our nation. You know?
Well, they actually know each other. It's funny. Mm-hmm. Bettina and Judge Pando are friends.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's actually good news. That makes sense.
And here's the other good news. I met Bettina over a year ago at a funeral with one of my high school friends or childhood friends that passed away, Camilo Aguirre. And his wife, Lourdes Aguirre, after his passing, she put all her energy into working for the Donald Trump campaign. Mm-hmm. And she invited me for a luncheon to meet Ivanka Trump to tell her about my issue with my mom. And that's where I met Bettina. Well, now she's in the White House. What's that?
Yeah, I said, I'll fly in for that. I'm going to meet them and say,
yeah,
what's going on?
Lourdes goes to the White House because she's involved in the Hispanic organization for Christian organization in the White House. So they even know about the show, the case, everything. So when she said nothing is impossible, you just never know when God is going to put the right people at the right time to create that domino effect and create the change that we need to make.
Right, and I really enjoyed Anna Marie. In fact, I'm gonna text her when I get done with her, and get these two talking, because we need more advocates like that. And I also have a couple barred attorneys, and I was talking to Brian Kinter the other day, and he has some other disbarred attorneys. Now, can you imagine if we were to get these attorneys that were disbarred
for doing good
and working with these legislators down there in Florida? I think we can start to begin to see some light at the end of this tunnel. I mean, you know, it's going to be a huge effort on everybody's part, and Randall, you are so correct. That we have to start working it together as families, as a family unit, because it's all important, our children, our family, and I can't express that enough, the stuff that we have to do to make this happen.
The more we can make it a coordinated effort between the various groups that are attacking the injustice from different angles, the more we can coordinate together to make a coordinated effort so that we're all directing our energies towards the point of greatest vulnerability, the point of greatest opportunity, mm-hmm. towards the direction where we can accomplish the most, the more likely we are to be effective.
I think so, yeah.
And we
just really love you guys. I mean,
anytime anyone says, hey, listen, we should work together, we're wide open to that. We think that's a great idea. We think all of these groups, you know, AAAPG, all of the groups that are out there, FACE Us, the Judicial Accountability Movement, all the different groups need to network and coordinate their efforts and come together.
Well, that's what we've been doing with the Marty Oakley Show. We come on Monday nights. Randall, you've been on there before with Marty Oakley, right? Center. You know, that's a huge show on Monday nights.
And I mean, I wanted to step in here while you talked about the financing, right? You know, that was it. But she really needs to understand that the title for funding, and I understand we're not going to get rid of welfare, but the D's, the E's, the X, is it X or Z, funding is what is prompting all of this. And I mean, and I know it's probably going to be a big issue here, but I'm going to bring up child support. When you attack a father for a dollar so that the federal government can pay the state $3, something's wrong with that arithmetic.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I would say so.
Right, because there's too much incentive to abuse that father.
And I hate to say father. Let's just say that the non-custodial parent, so we don't get get attacked for that one.
But you're right. Because you know, in all fairness, that is what we're talking about.
Right.
You know, but like I said, when you have to force somebody to pay a dollar so that a state can get $3, why don't you just give the mother or the father, the custodial parent, the dollar in the first place? You're saving $2.
Or if you're going to do it that way, why doesn't the state go ahead and pay the $2 and let the father off the hook?
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, this is you know. But Marcy, I also wanted to get with you, and I want to throw a name at you, and I wish you would connect to him at on Facebook. It's Chris Hallett.
Chris Allen.
H A L L E T. I don't know if there's two T's in that or one.
H A L L E T Hallett. Okay.
Yeah. He's got some reports going to Congress on this financing issue and emoluments and breaking up the bar and letting the bar members pay the states instead of a nonprofit organization. So, I mean, that might be some information that when you have this meeting with her would be very helpful to you.
Thank you very much. I will do that.
Wow.
And I'm going to stay tonight because I'm catching a cold.
Yeah.
Hello?
Luna? Yeah, I hear. Yes, we're here.
I'm going to say goodnight because I have a cold.
Okay.
And
that's good. We're going to probably be wrapping up the show here in the next few minutes anyway. I really think that we're going to be talking a lot to Bettina. I think she's a great advocate, you know. But, Randall, thank you for coming on. You know, we do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for it was a great show. I mean, it was very, very, very enlightening. And like I said, I have no problem pushing her down there in Florida. Like I said, she didn't do the normal politician thing at all.
I know. It's like so enlightening for us to suddenly have. We've got really some really good advocates down there that really knows what's going on, and they're going to be working together down there. So I really do think that Marcy being down there, I'm going to try to get down there as soon as I can. I don't like this cold weather.
Yes.
You know,
you got to
actually
call
her. It's not been that bad. But I need some sunshine. It's starting to wilt away.
Come next month and you can go to the court date with me.
I'm hoping Trump might be my moral support.
What?
Yeah. I think you ought to take Bettina with you to court.
Yeah, really.
I was having a good lady there. I'm telling you, they're going to fly right. When you bring her into court with you and let them know, I mean, God, I'm telling you, that's the egg. We had our senator come to court. Senator Laura Woods came to court with Larry Parr, and I tell you what, that was great. We had a great time because they were like, yes, ma'am, yes, sir, you know. It was great to watch.
You ever want to see a judge on good behavior, that's one way to see it.
Yeah. But thank you, guys.
We appreciate you. I think we're going to wrap it up, but it's been a great show.
Yeah.
And we appreciate all of you, and we appreciate Bettina Rodriguez-Aguilera, candidate for U.S. Congress in Florida.
Yeah.
Hope you all who are able will vote for her.
Yes, I want everybody to vote for her. We need to get. I would vote for her right now. I'm going to go down there and make sure that Karen knows about her and all of our friends down there know about her.
Yes.
So, yes, you got to help her get voted back in there. We need to have her back in, okay? But we're going to go ahead and probably just sign off. Thank you, Randall, for coming on. Marcy, we appreciate you. We love our audience, our listeners. It's been a great show. Appreciate everybody.
And giving up is
not an option. And what was her saying tonight? Her saying was failure is impossible.
That was Susan B. Anthony. Failure is impossible.
Yes, that is amazing. I mean, this woman, have you ever read her credentials? Go onto Google and go look at her, Bettina Rodriguez Aguilera. And I was just blown away. She's a very beautiful lady inside and out. I can't express to you enough her being in our lives today. I'm going to be in touch with her.
Very grateful for her. We thank you all. We hope you have a very pleasant evening. Justice requires transparency and accountability. Giving up is not an option. And
right.
God bless us, everyone.
Okay, good night, everybody.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Good night.
We're going to go ahead. Yeah, we're going to play something from Danny Tate. It's going to be a little bit longer version, but it's called Newsy. And I absolutely love this. And then we're going to go ahead and sign off. Good night, everybody.
Good night, and thank you.